The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our Tuesday Space Show program. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you for tuning in. Two real quick announcements. Number one is tonight is a 60-minute format program. So if you do want to get in a comment or question to our guest, Dr. Pat Patterson, about SmallSats or the upcoming SmallSat conference, pay attention to the time because we are on the 60-minute program format, not the 90-minute. So please be aware of that. And the second thing is Friday is a normal Space Show program, 9:30 a.m. California time, with Dr. Jim Vetta on space policy and the Outer Space Treaty. He is not an attorney. He is a space policy guru with the Aerospace Group. So that program where we were going to switch the time to Friday night for self-invited guests and people who wanted to try to be a co-host of the show, we're rescheduling that. So Friday is the regular time, 9:30 a.m. California time. So welcome to tonight's program, and it is about my absolute favorite of all time conferences. And when you go to the SmallSat website, you are going to freak out. It is so cool. And you got to see their new website, and the themes probably for SmallSat this year, which we'll talk about, are going to be off the wall. But it is smallsat.org. But real quick, first of all, if you want to call us and talk to our guest, Pat Patterson, 1-866-687-7223. Email drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. Or the blog, you can post a question or comment there. I'll get it almost immediately. And that's on our website over to upcoming shows. This is the first show listed. Open that page, and comments are down at the bottom. And the telephone is always the preferred way to hear from you, but any of those ways that you want to communicate with us is fine. Just be aware of the time because we're 60-minute format tonight. And do remember also that our full newsletter is up and running, so you can check that out on the website, and you can see all the programs we have planned toward the end of the year. A couple of other just quick announcements. Remember that we are a 501c3 nonprofit with OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. Your contributions keep the Space Show on the air. You'll see the contribute buttons for PayPal as well as Amazon. They have great programs for nonprofits. You'll see those over on the homepage on the right side and center right. We appreciate your support. Again, it does keep us on the air. And we thank you very, very much for that. Note also, we also have corporate sponsors, and you can check out their banner ads going across the website. Click on them. They do change the content of those banner ads from time to time. Do remember that we are trademarked and copyrighted. You can certainly take our shows and download them and share them. The rules are nothing commercial with the shows, no editing, not for yourself, not for YouTube, specifically not for YouTube. And then, of course, written transcripts are not permitted, even if they're for your own personal use. Read our full copyright statement at the bottom of every one of our website pages and our parents' nonprofits website page, OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. If you have any special needs or want to do something with the show, just ask me, email me. Our guest from the other day, Ken Davidian, had a special need for his dissertation. Done. All you have to do is be considerate and ask, and we'll work something out with you. And we thank you for that courtesy. And Pat Patterson is our guest tonight, and he is the director of the Advanced Concepts part of the Space Dynamics Lab, which is at Utah State University. And this is, it's really cool. In fact, if you go to SmallSat, which you really should be doing, you can take a tour of SDL, and And it's amazing. And Pat also really has about everything to do with it, just a phenomenal staff for SmallSat, which you hear me talk about many, many times during the year. And more guests and callers are talking about SmallSat during the year as well, which is a real testament to the success Pat has had with this and with his incredible staff. So Pat is with us, and you can read his full bio on the Space Show website. It is already there. Again, 60-minute format tonight. Their website, SmallSat, one word, .org. Do check it out. You're going to love their new website design. Pat, welcome to the show. How are you again this year?
I'm super, super. Great to be here.
So besides just a dynamite website, who designed it, by the way? We should give them a shout-out.
Well, we have a design crew. Actually, a lady named Julie Willis is one of our staff members here at the Space Dynamics Lab, and she supports the SmallSat Conference by helping us out with our website. So, yeah, it's cool. We went with the big city theme this year, and we sort of went with the retro throwback on the sort of the comic book sort of approach, and it's definitely very bright. You won't miss it when you pull it up. You certainly won't miss it.
Another thing I did before the show to prepare it, I printed out all the exhibitors, and I think, let me see how many pages it took me. It took me 4.5 pages to print out. Took me 15 pages to print out your 2017 list of exhibitors.
Yeah,
that
we have 190,
is amazing.
190 exhibits this year.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
And then I printed out the list of sponsors for the snack breaks and the meals and all of that, and I was stunned at how many you have for the 4 days or so of the event.
Yeah, we've got
unbelievable.
Got something like 60 sponsors.
Oh, unbelievable. So that alone shows the growth in this industry and the growth of the conference.
Yep, it's really been great.
And then
I'm excited, man. It's a week and a half away, and we're just about ready, and we're fired up.
So big data is the theme of the conference. What does that mean?
It is. Well, you know, really, there are so many good things happening, right, across the small satellite community. there's, you know, this lower cost and lower barrier to entry has brought more and more educators and small companies into the mix. There's been, obviously, as you know and all the listeners know, there are tremendous capability advancements happening in buses and their subsystems, miniaturized payloads. We're seeing a lot of efforts being put into launch vehicles, you know, folks like Rocket Labs, Vector, Virgin Orbit, Straddle Launch. I've left out a couple dozen there in listing those names. But it really gives us a lot more capacity, launch capacity, and increases our access to space. Ground stations are being stood up and ground networks. Even principal investigators, you know, the guys who are coming up, the folks who are coming up with all of these missions and different things, they now kind of, I believe, feel like they have something else in their toolbox right now that they can use to put missions together and go after the different science missions or whatever mission it is that they're going after. So that's kind of cool. We've seen, obviously, a lot of increased government and commercial investments. And all of these things together, you know, combined, are creating an environment where basically more satellites are being launched. And when you get more satellites launched, you get more data, right? So the whole point of the theme is how do you take all of this data that we know is coming, this sort of, I heard somebody talk about it one time as sort of this bow wave of data, but how do you take all this data and extract the knowledge from all of it? You know, how do you interpret it? How do you get those knowledge products to the end user in a timely fashion and in a way that works well for them so they don't have to do a whole bunch of work to make meaningful decisions based on that data? And, you know, how do you do all of this in a relatively low-cost way that meets the model that has made small satellites so desirable in the first place? That is the whole sort of discussion topic we're going to have around this year's theme. You know, we obviously will have the similar advanced technologies talks, we'll have launch talks, we'll have all sorts of other things happening, upcoming missions, the year in review, all those sorts of things. But we will have two sessions and a keynote speaker dedicated and focused on talking about this small satellite big data.
And that's new for this year, right?
That is. Yeah, that is. That's the first time we've actually talked about this. Each year we try to, you know, come up with a theme that allows us to talk in some more detail about a timely topic, and And we really felt this year with sort of the, kind of feels like all the pieces of the puzzle are coming together right now. And we felt that data analytics and getting all this data down was an important thing to talk about. We're very lucky, you know, I'm sure you've seen, in my mind, there's really no one more well-positioned to talk about how you ingest, interpret, and disseminate all this data than our keynote speaker this year, and that's Mr. Robert Cardillo. For those of you who don't know, Mr. Cardillo is the director of NGA, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, and he leads a tremendously capable workforce whose purpose is really to collect the data, analyze it, and distribute it, but it's geospatial intelligence products. Now, others in our community may not be focused on geospatial intelligence, but I think we can learn a lot from the process of how you deal with such large volumes of data and how you turn it into knowledge products that will be useful to the end user.
And so he's the keynote. What day is the keynote?
It's at 1 o'clock on Monday.
Which is the first day.
Now, the conference actually runs from Saturday the 5th through Thursday the 10th at about noon. Okay.
Uh-huh.
We start off with that Saturday and Sunday. The last 4 or 5 years, we've had this pre-conference workshop. It's really focused on educators and students. A lot of academic activities and projects. We'll probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 to 900 attendees there. And then we start we've traditionally referred to as small sat proper. That's Monday at 1 o'clock, and we'll have 2,500 attendees. We've got, throughout the week, we'll have 14 different technical sessions delving into all of these different technical topics. As I said earlier, we've got about 190 exhibits. We have 70 posters this year, and we've added, also this year, we've got these flash talks. We call them Swifties, but it's basically a three-minute kind of a talk where there's another stage we're going to set up. We're expanding, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. We're expanding our exhibit area. And you can talk for 3 minutes, get a big idea out there, and then, people can follow up and you can find out a lot more information. Now, we're also having NASA short talks as well. So NASA is going to be putting together a whole host of talks to have in our new exhibit area. So, I mean, it is just wall-to-wall, jam-packed small satellites. It's, you roll in on, for those who want to attend the pre-conference, you roll in on Saturday and Sunday. And then for those who are going to attend the SmallSat conference proper, it's 1 o'clock on Monday through about noon on Thursday. And it is just everything small satellites, man. That's all we talk about the whole week.
Can anyone talk at the flash talks, or are they orchestrated and planned?
Well, anyone could talk, but it's already planned.
Okay.
Yeah, we've already got the plans. People actually send in abstracts for them. And so they already are planned. But gosh, in the future, if somebody wants to talk at those, they can certainly submit an abstract.
So you just don't walk up from the crowd and talk for 3 minutes?
No. Unfortunately, no. We have so many things to pack into this. I guess it's a 2 days plus another 3 full days of schedule. It's just really hard to pack everything in and without doing a lot of pre-planning, which, as you know, we do. We spend basically an entire year pre-planning for this. It's just difficult to do, right?
Any live streaming for any of this yet?
We are going to have... Are we having live streaming? Marianne sitting here from the... Sorry, I had to... Oh, yeah, into the field house. So good point. So we are going to live stream within the facility itself. So if you don't happen to be inside of the technical session itself, you can be roaming around through the exhibits and whatnot, and you can see the live streaming there. We're not going to stream online, but we will have live streaming there if you're located there.
So unlike before, if we're in the exhibit hall, it'll be there for us to hear and see.
Correct. Yep, that's right. You bet.
Very cool.
So, if you just wanted to catch a key talk and you didn't have time to run into the technical session area, you can just pop over and sit down in front of a monitor and listen to what they have to say.
Are you still doing lunches out on the lawn? Has that changed?
We do. No. Yeah, we've got lunches out on the quad. I don't know how long it's been since you've been here. Has it been a couple of years now?
Yeah, a couple of years. Since I had that fall.
It just continues to get bigger and bigger. You know, one of the things that we have always done, maybe just because we've always done it, I don't know any other good reason, but we have always fed our attendees lunch together. So we have, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So we have two enormous tents. Just enormous. I mean, we could have a carnival in there in these tents, but we have two large tents where we have caterers roll right up. We'll have plenty of food. There's plenty of time to get in the tents and get some lunch and get some business done if you need to. And it's a pretty good environment. You know, usually the weather here is real nice, so it works really well for us to be able to have that outside. We're very lucky in terms of weather here, and it's not real humid. It works out pretty good. But they are big tents, man. We got a lot of room. And come join us for lunch. It's great. And as you know, we feed you a lot of food. There's plenty of food there to eat. So anyway, join us.
How many people are you expecting this year?
Well, I knew you were going to ask this question, but I knew I wouldn't have an answer for you. I'm going to guess 2,500.
Jesus.
But we just, you know, you never really know because we'll get 100 or 200 people who just walk up the day of the conference and register. And so that sways our numbers, you know, plus or minus a couple hundred, but it's going to be in the neighborhood of 2,500 people.
So what do you attribute this enormous growth in such a very short period of time for the conference and for the industry? What do you think is responsible for it?
Well, I would like to think that in some way the conference has had a positive impact, and what we're doing here has been good for the small satellite community, but it is certainly not the root cause of why the small satellites have seen such a big boom. I really believe, and maybe I'm naive, but I really believe the lower cost and the lower barrier to entry was a factor, and maybe even the biggest factor. You know, that lower cost meant that universities could then begin to train students in a hands-on way, right?
Right.
Which helped educate those students and help recruit more people to enter the industry. I think it's the people, though, in the industry that have made such great technical strides that have really made this happen. Now, our goal of the conference is to provide a forum, just simply provide a forum where the world's experts from this community can come together to share ideas, provide lessons learned, explore new mission concepts, and learn from what others are doing. But I do hope in some way that what the conference is providing has been useful in some way.
I think it is. So this year, the Space Frontier Foundation, through the New Space Conference, was held across the bridge from me in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
So I decided to drive over for it.
Mm-hmm.
And younger people were there in force, but I think you're 100% right, because there's all of these younger people starting businesses and doing different kinds of businesses that are small satellite related, either in terms of launch or ground stations, like you mentioned a few minutes ago,
yeah,
or actual companies to do this or that and the other. They're not all living off of the we the taxpayers. They're getting angel financing and
yeah,
venture financing. And the other thing is, they all go to SmallSat.
Yeah, a lot of them do.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. And they get energized and juiced, and they get business contacts and skills by going to SmallSat.
Yeah, and you know, when you, this may be an oversimplification, but you know, if you're a student or a recently graduated student or even a small company, there is just no way, it's just impossible, nearly, I guess, to put together all the capabilities you need to build a satellite that is as big as a school bus, right? You just can't do that. You don't have the infrastructure, you don't have the people, you don't have all the funding that you need, but that barrier to entry is much, much lower when you're building a 3U CubeSat or a 6U CubeSat. And that has just really brought a lot more players into the mix. And when you bring those players into the mix, some of them have exceptional ideas. And some of those ideas catch fire and move forward. And you know, all of a sudden, you know, 10 years later, you've got a lot of great concepts. And some of them work and they move forward and they affect the entire community in a very positive way.
For people who have been on the fence and now they're deciding that they want to go, can they stay near Logan, or what do they have to? What's accommodations like?
Well,
this year?
So that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. The hotels, actual hotels in Logan, are sold out. Okay, we do have a website though that can be helpful. If you go under our website, there's a lodging page, and if you go to the lodging page, you'll find you got to go down to the bottom because a lot of the hotels are sold out. But there's still hotels available in Ogden. Now that's a 45-minute drive. But there are hotels there. But the one thing I wanted to get across here is that even though, I mean, we have experienced tremendous growth, just like the entire small satellite community, and we're just trying our best to stay ahead of it. But with all this growth, there are also things happening in the city of Logan and this entire valley, which is called the Cache Valley, that I think are going to help us out in the future. We have had discussions with community leaders. And there's new hotels, there's facilities planned for development. In the next few years, and even as early potentially as next year, there's going to be some hotels and opportunities come online that should open up and should relieve some pressure on the ability to find a room and housing where your attendees are going to stay. So anyway, if you want to come, you can come. It's going to be a little bit of a drive this year, but please do expect it to get a little bit better here in the future.
So when I went to the lodging page in prep for the show tonight, I noticed that you got Airbnb possibilities.
We do, and there are some people doing Airbnb. Matter of fact, I know a couple people that just because they want to, they put their house up on Airbnb. They leave for the week. They take their family on a vacation because it's still summer. School has not started yet, and they can take their kids with them, and then the house is available for someone to keep, or you know, for the week, and then they come back and make a few bucks, right?
So absolutely. Yeah, so that's
Airbnb
a possibility.
Definitely an option. Yeah.
But I didn't notice any option for park benches. So I guess you don't have that one in Logan, like San Francisco, right?
I missed that. I'm sorry.
You don't have the park bench option like San Francisco
park bench?
Does. Yeah, I'm joking with you because people can live on a park bench in San Francisco.
Well, so that's funny that you say that because we have had people bring tents.
Oh, really?
There are people who you know, just take it as an opportunity to stay. We have a couple beautiful canyons here, and they'll bring a tent or a trailer. There are some places where you can get a little more remote, where there's a couple places where you can actually get a place on a fishing stream. And you can stay on a fishing stream, and after the conference is over every night, you can go out and go fishing. So that's not your traditional, what we think of, hotel traveling for professionals, but it's kind of cool.
Are they close by to Logan? Or?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, 5 minutes.
Wow.
10 minutes max, yeah.
So people can have a real adventure and still attend the conference.
Yeah, exactly. I talked to one guy. I won't mention his name, but I talked to one guy that came 2 years ago, And he called me and said he wanted to come. And I said, well, hey, let me see if I can help you find a hotel. And he said, no, I'd rather stay out here. It's just a lot more fun because I never get to do this. You know, I'm either at home or I'm going to a conference in a big city, and this is an opportunity for me to sort of get away and have my thoughts all to myself.
Very cool. Now, another thing I noticed is that you have industry parties on two nights now.
We do. Well, yeah. So if you talk about the parties, obviously on Monday night we have the opening social. And the Space Dynamics Lab hosts that social right here at the Innovation Campus. If you haven't been here before, there's a real nice little pond, and we've got this big grass area. And so we're going to have, again, like I said, it's kind of the night in the big city theme. We've got just ridiculous amounts of food. We've got several drink stations. We'll have a band. We'll have a jazz band. We're going to do street food, tacos, shish kebabs. We even have this noodle bar, which I don't even know what that means because I'm not cool enough to know what that means. We've got coney dogs. You know. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and that comes with your registration rate. So if you register for that, you get to go to that. Then on Tuesday night, we've got two parties, which the entire community is invited to. One is by FedEx. There's a place called Cafe Sabor out on the west side of town. It's a wonderful little, it's an old train station sort of a place. And
uh-huh.
They're having a patio party at 6:00, and that's put on by FedEx. And then AGI has a party at 6:30 that same night at the Ryder Mansion. It's spelled R-I-T-E-R, but it's pronounced Ryder. And that's going to be a great party. That's where, if you'll remember, where some of the old orbital
parties. Orbital parties, you see, beautiful grounds.
Yeah, it's all just beautiful. It's right in the middle of town. You can park and walk, and so it's pretty cool.
So whoa, what is the FedEx connection to SmallSat?
Well, FedEx has taken it, you know, very importantly. They have this white glove service now, right?
No, so, I'm not. I use FedEx, but I don't know what that is.
Yeah, well, white glove is actually a capability that they have now where they will, if you have space hardware, let's say you want to deliver a 12U, 3U, 6U satellite, they will actually come to your facility. You have the opportunity to inspect their trucks that they bring. They'll put it in a nice sealed area. They tighten it down. They've got accelerometers on the trucks. They've got humidity sensors. They've got temperature sensors on board there. They take very, very good care of that, and it's really a point-to-point capability. So if you wanted to send it from Denver, Colorado to Vandenberg Air Force Base, say, they'll come and they'll pick it up and take it, and it's called White Glove, and they want people to know about it, that they are supporting the delivery of space hardware for the space community. Now, it makes a lot more sense, obviously, when you're talking about small satellites. It's hard to haul a school bus across the country, but it's much easier if you can put it in a 2-foot by 3-foot box and haul it across the country. And they charge a little more, but it's a good capability. So they want people to know about that.
That's really outstanding. I mean, I love FedExpress, but that's a great service to know about. I didn't know.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. And then on Wednesday night, we've also got a couple of really good parties. Moog, they have their garden beer party. I think you've seen that before.
Right.
That's down at the Riverwoods. That's at 6 o'clock, and everybody's invited to that. And then there's another one, that same night at 7 o'clock at a place called Logan Coach. Now, Logan Coach is where the SpaceX spaceflight party used to be in the past.
Okay.
It's kind of an old warehouse. There used to be sort of a train station kind of a thing there where people would go store and warehouse things many, many, many years ago. But it's old and rustic, but they decorated up and it looks spectacular, and there's been some big, big parties in there. But Saab Aerospace, AVO, and Arianespace have teamed up to have that party there at 7 o'clock on Wednesday night. So Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights, if you're looking for something to do, social activities, there are plenty of things to do.
Very, very cool. And those are part of your registration, right?
Well, as a matter of fact, I mean, they are. They're part of the registration, but, you don't have to pay these folks to go there. They're just
hosting a party for everyone.
Yeah, they're just hosting a party for SmallSat, and they love doing it. They want to get the people there. They want to do business, and they want to enjoy, and they want to get the word out about their products. And so, you can go there and eat and drink, and they usually have bands and music, and yeah, it's really fun. It's a lot of fun, actually. And, by the way, a lot of business gets done there.
So just as a point of clarification, because people don't think you can drink when you go to Utah, so what's the deal on that?
Oh, yeah, we drink in Utah.
So you can drink at parties?
Absolutely, absolutely. Matter of fact, even at the Monday Night Social here at the Space Dynamics Lab, we have an alcohol bar, and we monitor it. We don't get out of control. We're all professionals, but we like to enjoy ourselves a little bit.
Let me ask you this: for people coming that are not familiar with what you're doing, you have a lot going on. So it sounds really busy, but you've maintained single track for the conference event.
We have.
Correct. Okay.
We have. We have always maintained single track, and the reason we've done that is we get overwhelming response from the feedback that we get from all of our attendees, that they want it to be single track. They want to come here. They kind of feel like this is the watering hole where they can not only learn about maybe the key areas that they're working on in their daily business, but it also gives them a chance to learn about other things. And so instead of having it separated out into 4 or 5 tracks or whatever, which would allow us to have more presentations, but it also sort of dilutes the attendance at those different talks. And those people like to hear about things, and having that broader, we've always felt, and I think our attendees have too, that having that broader sort of knowledge about what's going on in the rest of the industry benefits what you do every day in your job, even though it might not be exactly what you do every day.
And even though you've gotten really big, what's networking like? Is it still easy to do, or is it too big for networking?
No, it's awesome. It is just awesome. Look, you know, here's what I think is key. We're in a small town, right? There are, I don't know how many people live in Logan, but it's, you know, this entire valley, the makeup of this entire valley is probably a little over 100,000 people. So it's a small town. You'll see people. If you want to talk to somebody, you're going to get a chance to talk to them in a technical session. You're going to get a chance to talk to them at one of the side meetings. We have 27 different side meetings. We all have lunches together. We feed everybody together. So all 2,500 of our attendees will be out there at the lunch together. There's all these side parties, and I don't know, maybe, I'm naive, but a tremendous number of our attendees attend those side parties. So if you want to catch somebody there, you know, that's a great place to do it. And it's just a small, I call it like going to summer camp. You know, it's kind of like going to summer camp, and you don't get one chance to meet with somebody you want to talk to, whether they be a decision maker or just somebody that you want to talk to. You're going to get 10 chances to cross paths with them and talk to them. And whether you're talking technical or business deals or whatever the thing is, you're going to get a lot of opportunities.
So John is in Boston, and he says, Pat, I'm at your website, and I'm looking at all the side meetings. Do you register for them in advance? Are they an additional charge? Explain how we can attend the side meetings.
Nope. I think there's only one side meeting. There's only one side meeting that is charged for, and that is the side meeting on Thursday and Friday. The increasing your small satellite data or the capability of your small satellite data or something like that. Uh-huh. And the reason is that's a closed meeting that's held here at the Space Dynamics Lab. All of the other meetings, all you got to do is, some of them you may have to go in there and just let them know you're coming, but you can attend all of those. You'll find all the specifics on the location and the time of those. We try really hard, actually, to make sure that they don't interfere with the conference. What we want people to do is to be able to go to the technical sessions, go to the posters, go to the Swifty talks, go to the lunches, and do all these things. But we do have breaks, and so in those breaks, that's when we try and sponsor and try and have a lot of these side meetings. So you'll see, you know, a lot of side meetings for 45 minutes or something like that. Just look at the description, pick the ones you want to go to, two or three a day or whatever, and go hit them. I know that the people, you know, really the people who are putting these on, I mean, we all know this, but they put a ton of effort and a ton of time into preparing for giving whether it be some sort of a tutorial or whether it's a town hall meeting. They put a lot of effort into this. And so the more people that come, the more feedback we get that they're happy that those things are happening.
So
they don't want to have three people in their meeting. They want to have, you know, 50 or 100 or 200. So
there's a contact with a person's name and an email address. So that's the person putting that side meeting on. Is that correct?
Yep. What we do is we don't control the content of those side meetings. What we do though is we make sure that they have a proper room, that they've got the proper audio-visual equipment. They control all the content. If they want to talk about, you know, radiation hardness, if they want to talk about radiation testing or vibration testing or how to do post-mission disposal, that's up to them. But what we do is we provide them a venue, and then we put the information on our website so that our attendees can choose which one of those that sort of best meets their needs.
So I'm sure this is closed off for now, but if somebody wanted to do a side meeting next year on some related subject, they would apply for that earlier on.
They would. There's a very simple application process that you can go through, and we just take a look at it. And we just kind of do the general, you know, make sure that it fits with the small set conference. We're not going to have any conference on, you know, any side meeting on, you know, how to build motorcycles or something like that.
Right.
But if it relates to the small satellite community, we will happily get a room for you and set you up with some audio-visual equipment and get you going.
Paul is in New York, and he said, do you have any side meetings or any programming that is sort of an instructive on how to raise money in today's competitive environment?
So that is a great point, and I'm glad you brought that up. So there's 27 side meetings. So as old as I'm getting, I can't remember all the side meetings. So pardon me for that. However, what I will tell you is that we have, I guess I call it sort of an alliance, but we have formed an alliance with the Silicon Valley Symposium. That's the one that happens in February out in California.
Uh-huh.
And that's Silvano Payne, right? So he's the CEO of Sat News, and he has really focused a conference that's been 2 or 3 years running now. It seems to be really taking hold. And really the whole point of that is we're going to have some investors, and it's a panel, and those investors are going to get up and talk about what they look for when they're looking to fund somebody, right?
Right.
So that's going to be an hour description of you know, if you're a company that wants to go build some sort of a sensor that you think makes a lot of sense for the small satellite community, probably a good idea to go listen to these folks and then maybe follow up with them at this panel. And by the way, this panel is on Tuesday, and you can find it. It's called Business and Finance. And then, you know, follow up with them afterwards, because these are people who are actually putting money down, commercial investment money down in these commercial organizations.
Now, is this a side meeting?
No, it's not a side meeting.
Okay.
It's actually a panel in SmallSat proper on Tuesday.
Okay.
Yep.
I notice you have a financial title for your agenda on Tuesday, so that's what it is, right?
Yep, that's it. That's it. Yep.
You have a caller. Are you up for this? You want to talk to the caller?
Sure.
Hi, caller. Welcome to our program with Dr. Patterson. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is Tim from Huntsville.
Okay, Tim, go for it.
Yeah. I was wondering if y'all were keeping up with the news on interorbital.
So I'm embarrassed to say I have not very well. I am not the right person to talk to. I know several members of my committee that support me have. I'm not too knowledgeable about that. I'm probably not the right person to talk to that.
What is their news? I've been trying to get them back on the show, and they haven't responded to an email from me in months.
Well, they've been updating their website more, and their latest update was on the 25th of July, and they said that they're ready to test the guidance system on their N1 small sat launcher.
Oh, that's awesome. By the way, so that is great news, right? I mean, one of the things that has really, I won't say pained, but it's certainly been a difficulty for the small satellite community is launch capacity. Years ago, when I'm talking 20 years ago, when we used to be at meetings or a small sat conference or other, you know, small sat places, the discussion was always, there's always this side discussion focused around, wouldn't it be great if we could just get our satellites launched, right? So people were coming up with these small satellites. They didn't cost a lot of money. They got them ready to sit, and they just sat there on the shelf. Well, now, you know, all of a sudden the space community saw this happening, and they saw this need. So they put together a business model and said, hey, maybe we could have some secondaries or some rideshare launches. You've seen a very successful thing happen with the International Space Station and NanoRacks and some of the other folks who are now deploying systems off the International Space Station. So that's been a great thing for the small satellite community. But now, if you look, and there's a great paper, I would really like to point you to a great paper that was, I think it was last year or the year before, or maybe even both, but it was done by Carlos Niederstrasser out of Orbital ATK. And it was talking about all of the upcoming efforts in launch vehicles for dedicated launch vehicles for small satellites. And you can find that. By the way, we have a site called Digital Commons that Utah State University supports for us. So all of the conference talks, all of the papers, all of the presentations dating back to the very first conference in 1987 are located on that site. So if you'll go in there and look up launch vehicles and the name Carlos Niederstrasser, you'll be able to find that talk, and it gives a whole lot of information about small launch vehicles that are due to come online. It's a pretty exciting time right now for launch. You know, if we can have some successes across the industry in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I really think that's going to help us with our access to space.
What is that website address?
Just go to SmallSat. Uh-huh. And when you go to SmallSat, it's, which is www.smallsat.org, there is a page called Proceedings.
Okay.
And if you go to the Proceedings page, it will take you to a link of previous year's proceedings, and you can do a search on every single year, or you can just type in your search on, say, launch vehicles or Orbital ATK or Carlos Niederstrasser. And they've got a great paper, which they've been updating year to year, and it really has provided some useful information. I'm sorry I didn't have much more on interorbital, but that's just, you know, just trying
that's
to track
okay.
everything.
I sent y'all a link.
Say
again, Tim.
I sent y'all a link. Last,
oh, good. Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it.
Tim, have you ever just called Interorbital and asked them what they're doing? Tim, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Yeah.
Why don't you just pick up the phone and call them?
I think I'd rather email them.
Well,
but it sounds like it looks like they're busy. That's probably the reason why they haven't been on your show. They've been doing a lot more. I've been keeping up with them for a while, and they've gotten farther than I've seen them before.
I don't know. I was wondering if they were healthy and well, because usually they are on my show every year, so I like Rod and Rhonda a lot. I enjoy talking to them. And,
so Tim, you bring up a good point, right? The small sat community in general is just absolutely running at breakneck pace. And especially if you look at what's happening in the launch domain and these dedicated launch vehicles, these folks are just putting in a tremendous amount of hours, and I think they probably just have their nose to the grindstone and just working their tails off trying to get there.
Yeah. I mean, one of my complaints was that they were piling on this huge roster, and they didn't have anything to launch it with, and now it looks like they're actually getting somewhere.
Well, we don't know, Tim, so we can't help you.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not too knowledgeable about that. I'm sorry.
I mean, it just looks like it is to me, but
well,
I could be wrong.
Call them. Pick up the phone. Don't be a stranger.
All right.
And if you call them, tell them to answer Livingston's damn email. Okay? I'm gonna rely on you to do that. Thank you for your call, Tim.
No problem.
Bye-bye. The number of small launchers, you alluded to this, that seem to be getting ready to come on the market seem to have the potential to even turn this industry more upside down than what it has been over the last 5 years. How do you see that?
Oh, I think that's true. I really do. There are a lot of... a lot of technologies that are certainly important. You know, when you look at the different things that could help us, one is data downlink, getting data down. The other is data analytics. Constellation management will be a huge step forward. You know, there's so many complexities associated with managing a constellation of several hundred satellites, right, that this industry just hasn't had to deal with before. Propulsion is a key one. When I'm talking about propulsion, I'm talking satellite propulsion, right? Doing divert maneuvers for orbital maneuvers or even attitude control. But access to space and that additional launch capacity is really going to be key. My gut feel is that as a small satellite community, we kind of raced out and focused our efforts on the small satellite bus itself and in getting these buses up. The launch capacity wasn't there to get those satellites up into space. As time's going on here and we're having more and more successes and more companies join in and understand that has been a problem, I just can't imagine that some of these companies will be successful in the future, and it's going to sort of break the logjam, and I think it's really going to help everybody out.
The students at Utah State and the interns that come into the Space Dynamics Lab, do they participate in and get excited over what's happening in the small sat community and with the conference?
Oh yeah, they do. Absolutely. Absolutely. We have, at SDL, you know, we've got, I probably get this number wrong, but it's like 560 employees, and we've got 100 plus of our employees are students, right? Whether they be working on their advanced degrees, PhDs, master's degrees, whatever, and a significant number of those are technical folks. And just like me, when the SmallSat conference started back in 1987, it was just an eye-opening experience as to what people were working on, what the capabilities were. It really got me excited about the different technologies. It kind of helped me, I'm going to say, focus my efforts because, you know, if you go and you spend 4 or 5 days at a conference and you hear about 20 different technology areas, you know, maybe there's 3 or 4 that kind of really tickle your fancy. And then you can say, okay, well, those are the things that I want to study in. Those are the things that I want to continue to do my research in and write papers and maybe work on a dissertation. So it helps focus it. The other thing it gives them, it really gives our students, not just our students from Utah State, but students around the world who come here, it really gives them an opportunity to go speak with all of the industry representatives and see what job openings are available. There is a lot of recruitment. There are a lot of students who bring resumes to the conference. There's a lot of students who provide poster sessions. We obviously have that Frank J. Redd Student Scholarship Competition. This is our 25th year this year. We're going to give away another $30,000 to students. And we have six finalists who will get up on stage and speak in front of 1,000 people. You know, what a better place to recruit students than to go hear them speak about their technology in front of 1,000 people. You know, it's just a great opportunity. So there's a lot of that happens here. And I think we've always had, because of our beginnings, we've always had a strong student involvement. And I think in general, that continues. So we're excited about it. We do everything we can to support it.
And you still have different universities and their students there in the student part of the exhibit hall, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We'll have, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it's something like 14 different student exhibits that will be talking about the satellites they're building, you know, and then we've got the 6 finalists who get up on stage, and then we've got several who will be giving posters in the poster sessions. There'll be a few hundred very capable students running around the conference that'll be, you know, looking for people to talk to and looking to find a job, you know, so anyway it's actually beneficial to both. It's beneficial to the organizations looking for new talent, and it's beneficial to the students in the space industry looking to find their first job.
And it is worth mentioning when you talk about the 30 grand in scholarship money, this goes to the students, not the schools, correct?
Oh, no, it goes straight to the student.
Right,
which is
really cool.
However, we do a cool thing. We started this a few years ago. So with each of our students, when they get up and they first thing they have to do is turn in a paper. And they are very well-written papers, and they're very long. But we put together a panel of judges from around the world to score those papers. Now, the 6 finalists, those are the people who get to actually get up on stage. They get up on stage, they give their thing, and the winning student, they have an advisor. They all have to list their advisors. Their advisor gets to come to the next conference for free. So there's a little bit of something in there for the advisor to make sure that they pick good topics, that they pick good students, that they help the students understand what's important to talk about some of these technical areas. And every year we have a professor come back, an advisor from a university somewhere in the world come back for free. So that's great news.
You have another email that came in from listener Bijan, and he is in Sweden. And let's see if you can address this. I'm not sure if this will be within your purview or not. Prices for launching 20 tons to orbit with an Ariane 5 or Falcon 9 range from 3,000 to 10,000 per kilo, but launching a one-unit CubeSat seems to cost $100,000 per kilo. Why are the CubeSats so much more expensive to launch? How would small rockets lower that cost? And he's using as a resource spaceflight.com, a rideshare provider's price list.
So great question, one that I'm not really knowledgeable about. However, I have not heard 40,000. Man, I don't know if I've heard 40,000 per kilo. I thought it was more in the area of maybe it is somewhere in there. I'm not sure, but I think the real key aspect isn't so much money, and I know money's a big deal, but I think the real key aspect is if you go on a larger launch vehicle, you're a secondary.
Right.
You're a rideshare. You go when they go, you go where they go, okay? So if you have a technology demonstration mission and you want to demonstrate some technology in LEO, perhaps that's a good thing to do. But if the mission gets delayed a year and a half, you get delayed a year and a half, right? The nice thing about the dedicated small satellite launch vehicles that are going to be coming on board, I'm just so excited and so positive about it, is that you get an opportunity to pick, you know, what month of the year you want to go on. You get an opportunity to pick what orbit you're going to go to, and they go to multiple different orbits right now. And at some point in the future, you know, if you have enough and you can take over enough of the cargo bay, you can go exactly where you want to go. So I think those are some of the key aspects, more than the actual financial piece of it, that really will benefit the small satellite community. Again, going to the specific orbit you need to go to and going there when you need to get there.
Yeah, I have done a lot of shows on this with Vault and with Vector and other small launchers. And they say you can buy the whole rocket and you can choose your launch date and you can choose where you're going to go.
Yep.
And
yep.
You're not subject to launching to an orbit that you really don't want to be in. Plus, if you want to have fuel on board for some maneuverability, you may not be able to do that on a rideshare because
right.
The primary may object to it.
You know, again, I may be a little bit naive, and I'm sure there's some missions that it just doesn't make sense for. But I think that's probably the biggest advantage over the price. I'm not familiar. I'm not the guy who works with the launch providers on prices, so I'm just not familiar there. But I know it's just a huge advantage to be able to go where you want to go when you want to get there.
We're nearing the 1 hour for the show. What should listeners focus on if they're somehow sitting or straddling the fence here?
Well, you know, I don't know. Small sat has become, I've heard people refer to it as sort of the watering hole for the small satellite community to come to. If there are very specific people that you want to talk to, either they're going to be here or some representative of theirs will be here, right? We're going to have 650 organizations represented here. We're going to have 40 different countries represented here and 2,500 plus probably attendees. You know, even if you were to come for a day or two and sort of handpicked, what you wanted to go see, maybe go look at our agenda and you pick some topics that sound interesting to you and make some contacts. You know, if it helps your business and you can maybe find some people to team with or work with in one way or another or even perhaps get a little bit of funding, some Kickstart funding, you know, for some people that makes a whole lot of sense. You know, it's for some people it can be a long trip. It's oftentimes hard to find, at least today, a lodging in Logan, but you know, if you're willing to stay in Ogden and drive 45 minutes up for a day or two, it might be worthwhile to you.
Absolutely. Do you think, one of the things we haven't talked about, and it usually comes up on the show, is people who aren't familiar with the area, so they fly into Salt Lake City, how do they get to Logan? Do they have
yep.
to rent a car? What did
yep.
Super
you,
Shuttle
yep.
go or what?
Yep, you can fly into Salt Lake City. That's probably the nearest large airport and easier to get to from, you know, anywhere in the country or in the world, really, is to fly into Salt Lake City. You can rent a car. There's shuttles. You can take a shuttle that will bring you straight to Logan. You have to do a little ranging online, but that can certainly be done and save you some money, and then you don't have to pay the rental car costs, you know, throughout the week. But we're about an hour and a half north of Salt Lake City, so you land, you get your bags, half an hour later you're on the road, and an hour and a half later you're in Logan. So if you give yourself a couple hours after you land in Salt Lake City, you can probably be finding yourself here in Logan and ready to attend the SmallSat Conference.
So you don't have to rent a car?
No, you do not have to rent a car. No.
Okay.
There are shuttle services that come from Salt Lake City. They drive up through Logan and actually up into Idaho, and they will drop you at any location along that sort of pathway.
If you're there with family, because it is summertime, you used to have family adventures and things. I'm not seeing that on the website.
Well, so that's a good point. We did have, for several years, we were putting together these adventures where you could go hiking or mountain biking or fishing and whatnot. And what we found, we did a little data analysis of our own, and we found that it was a lot of work for the staff. And we've got a very, very small staff. We try and keep our rates as low as we can. But it was a lot of work for them, and we were only supplying those things to roughly 10% of the entire people who came here. So we just felt that it was a lot of work with not a lot of payback. However, if you still want to do those things, if you want to go fishing, if you want to go horseback riding, if you want to take canoes out and canoe around, if you want to go on a hike, if you want to go on a four-wheeler ride, there are lots and lots of things to do, and you can find those on our website. Now, that's not, you know, officially sanctioned by the SmallSat conference, but if you go to the webpage, you go to the travel page, and then you go to come early and stay late, that gives you a whole lot of information about what there is to do in Logan and the surrounding areas. It gives you emails and contact information and numbers. If you'd like to go on even like a bird sanctuary, you want to go to a refuge or go fishing, something like that, you can do that. And we've got all the information on our website.
Fishing and bird hunting, huh? Bird watching.
Yeah, there's a tremendously large bird sanctuary over in Brigham City just before you come over. It's about a half an hour from here. Before you come over the mountain, it's amazing. There is on the north end of Salt Lake, of the Great Salt Lake, there is a non-salty water part of the Great Salt Lake, a clear water, and there are just birds and things out there, and people literally come from all over the country, and perhaps I'm not a birder, but they come from all over the world to go see all these species of water, birds that fly through the whole area here. We're right in the middle of really the flyway, the western flyway for all the ducks and geese and all the different animals that come down from Alaska on their way home or Canada on their way home when they're headed to find a warmer place to spend the winter time. So, pretty cool place. You gotta carve out a few hours to do that, but it's just a half an hour away.
Anything we should have brought up about the conference, the agenda that we've omitted or forgotten somehow?
No, I think I talked about Mr. Cardillo, right?
The keynote. Uh-huh.
Yeah, talked about the keynote. We're ready, we are just excited to have all the people come here. It is a extremely vibrant, energetic meeting, perhaps more than most. Maybe I'm biased, but it is just, start at 8 o'clock, meetings all day, lunches together, socials in the evening, parties, until 10, 11 o'clock at night, go home, get some rest as fast as you can, get up the next day and do it again. And it's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun to put on. It's a lot of fun to be a part of this amazing community. And I'm just thrilled, and a lot of people are, that it's such a growing and booming community. It's great fun.
Point of clarification, is it put on by the Space Dynamics Lab or Utah State?
No, it's a Utah State University conference. The Space Dynamics Lab has been very, very generous in supplying my time, because I actually work for the space. My day job is with the Space Dynamics Lab.
Uh-huh.
But they are just tremendously generous in allowing me to spend some of my time and to support the conference. But I like to jokingly call that my night job. But I really appreciate SDL and being able to do that. They are one of our key sponsors. We have and they allow us to come down and use their facility for the opening social on Monday night. But the conference is actually put on by Utah State proper.
So listeners, it's very special. It is really customer service friendly and oriented. Pat and his incredible staff are really care about your experience there. You're not just a number attending, and you will love it. And if you have not ever been to SmallSat, you're crazy not to go. And that's about all I can say. It is just, it's very special. It's an incredible environment, and Pat and his crew, they deserve lots and lots of credit and shout-outs. And you'll feel like you're in a really cool family, not a dysfunctional family, a really cool family for all the time that you are there. And the people blend in and become part of your family, and I just can't speak highly enough about it. So hopefully you will make it, and then you can come on the space show and tell us about it. So there's a little plus at the end of the rainbow after you go there. Pat, we want to thank you very much for being with us, and I'm looking forward with Dr. Juris to be back next year, and can't wait, so make the time go fast, okay?
We certainly will. It comes, you know, it comes quicker than you think, right?
Absolutely.
We complete the conference. We give our staff about a two-week break, and then we get right back to work, and we start putting on another conference. So, but it's always an exciting time, you know, when 2,500 of your best friends come to town. It's a good thing.
And as I said, you guys are fabulous hosts and hostesses. There's nothing like it in any other conference. So even conferences that are not this big are not as warm and friendly. So I hope you all can go, and I want to hear about it on the space show. Pat, thank you. Thank you to all of your wonderful staff for helping put this program together as well.
You're very welcome.
We will talk to you soon, and I'll send you this recording as soon as I get it up and running on the show.
Sounds great.
Thank you very much. Everybody, that's it. Hotel Mars tomorrow, Friday and Sunday space show program. Good night, and thanks to Pat Patterson and his staff for doing this, and to all of you for participating. Good night from the space show.